First Kings chapter 9. Last week we jumped off kind of using First Kings chapter 8 and the dedication of the temple. And I'd like to be great with language, and I'm not great with language. I'm one of those Christians that I see connections in things, and I think that I personally think that God has been involved in numbers of things, and that He does use types and shadows, that the natural does speak of the supernatural a lot of times, and He leaves calling cards, hints of Himself in things, such as next week, Jamie speaks the first Sunday of the season of Advent. I knew you'd know. So I'm not talking about Advent, and so you're safe. Like, I'm not trying to go that way, except that I might go that way just as an illustration. So what do you think? Do you think it was just happenstance that Jesus is born in a stable, and that they put Him in a feeding trough, and they have some scrap hand-woven cloth, because that's how, they didn't have anything made in China. I mean, it was hand-woven, so they had some sort of cloth, swaddling cloth? I mean, something that's a fiber woven. Yeah, enough to keep Him warm and stuff. That didn't just happen. It was God the Father planned this as a sign to the rest of us. I don't know so much it was a sign to the baby Jesus as much as they were living through the situation, but maybe later Mary would hide it in her heart and all this. Like angels appearing to a bunch of shepherds. They're spending the night out there, and maybe it's a cool night, and they're watching over the sheep and keeping the wolves away, if possibly, in case something happens. And suddenly a bunch of angels show up and start praising God. And they want to go see, well, who is this that was born that these angels show up? Okay, I'll try to leave it alone. And that's those guys from the east and the stars. But I'll leave that alone. So, 1 Kings chapter 9, it says, "Now it came about when Solomon had finished building the house of the Lord and the king's house," that's his place, "and all that Solomon desired to do, that the Lord appeared to Solomon a second time, as He appeared to him at Gibeon." Now, the first time He appears to him is in 1 Kings 3, and that's in a dream, and that's where God says, "What do you want?" And Solomon does this great response, saying, "You've really taken care of my father David. I'm new at being a king. I would ask that you give me understanding, that you give me, as we say, wisdom, so I know what to do in situations." And God comes back with that and says, "Tell you what, since you didn't ask for riches, you didn't ask for a long life, I'm going to give you understanding and wisdom, but I'm also going to give you riches and long life. I'm going to give you three things. Just follow me like your father David has followed me." So here's the second time He talks to him. Now this is 20 years. Takes 7 years to build the house of the Lord, I think, and 13 years to build his own place. He had an Egyptian wife. Maybe you wanted to really make it look good and make her happy. I don't know what. He just liked to make stuff. So God says in verse 3, "I have heard your prayer and your supplication, which you have made before me, and I have consecrated this house which you have built by putting my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. As for you, if you will walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I've commanded you, and will keep my statutes and my ordinances, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, just as I promised to your father David, saying, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. But if you and your sons indeed turn away from following me, and do not keep my commandments and my statutes, which I've set before you, and go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land which I have given them, and the house which I have consecrated for my name. And I will cast out of my sight, so that Israel will become a proverb and a byword among all peoples, and this house will become a heap of ruins. And everyone who passes by will be astonished and hiss and say, why has the Lord done this thus to this land and to this house? And they will say, because they forsook the Lord their God, who brought their fathers out of the land of Egypt and adopted other gods and worshiped them and served them. Therefore, the Lord has brought all this adversity on them. So it came about at the end of 20 years in which Solomon had built the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house, that Hiram, the king of it's a seaport place. His kingdom up at Tyre is known for, it's a trade center. They came from everywhere. They had massive amounts of ships of their own. You know, even the archaeological digs shows how impressive it was. So at the end of 20 years, he's been supplying Solomon with all the cedar, cypress, and gold according to all of his desire, whatever he needed. And so then King Solomon gives him an exchange, in return for this, 20 cities in the land of Galilee. So the king comes down to check on these 20 cities that he's given him. And in verse 13, he says, what are these cities which you've given me, my brother? I don't know the tone of that, but I imagine it was, I don't know. So he calls this area of Galilee a city name, and it means as good as nothing. They undoubtedly weren't such a hot deal in exchange for this. I don't know how much we can read into this, but this is the next thing that's said after God makes a second offer to Solomon. And though he may be full of wisdom, he's been given riches. He's been given long life. Treating people with shrewdness is probably not part of the Father's plan of doing things. And yet, it falls into God's big design and showing us things. Why Galilee? Galilee becomes known as the land of the Gentiles. Maybe this is the reason. Maybe their people come from Tyre and settle here, different people groups. And so when Jesus is around this area and living around here, it's a bunch of mixed stuff. Not everybody's Jewish up around the Sea of Galilee and up in that area. Maybe this is where it goes back to. I haven't looked it up. We can look it up sometime. That made me start thinking, and you know how he talks, maybe he talks to you the way he does to me. I know we're all wired a little differently, but he does communicate, and it's kind of up to us to pay attention to the ways he talks. I was at Thanksgiving dinner at my sister-in-law's house in Birmingham, and they were having conversation. Patsy was talking about what she's been reading, and how she's been reading Richard Foster one of his books from years ago on prayer, and somewhere in it she was getting into some of the other things that God was showing her, and then Peggy says, I can't remember how they bring it up, but Peggy mentions Isaiah 53. And I don't even know what she said, because there was this little spiritual thing go off in me. And I thought, I should go check this out in the next day or two, just in case, because that doesn't happen real regularly. So I went and read it, and I was touched by it. Now, I don't know if you'll be touched by it today, but I thought I would go and look at some of these things. Look at Isaiah. I'm at chapter 52. And I'll probably just try to say these things. I was going to start with verse 8 about, listen, you watchmen, lift up your voices. They shout joyfully together, for they will see with their own eyes when the Lord restores Zion. Break forth, shout joyfully together, you waste places of Jerusalem. For the Lord has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. He has bared his holy arm. That's usually a sign, a symbol for the word Messiah, usually. In the sight of all the nations, that all the ends of the earth may see the salvation of our God. Again, I guess, Jamie, you don't mind me just using your name as a... Okay. You're right there. When we get to seasons of the church calendar, like Advent, I find it sometimes hard to bring it to freshly enter into it. I don't know about you. Like, I have trouble sometimes entering freshly into the season of Easter, because I've just been around long enough and been around Christianity so long, and it's just sort of a blah, 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 blah. You know, McDonald's is now playing during their Christian, they have a Christian set that plays at 6 a.m. I don't know what time it starts. It's always on at 5:30 and stuff. Now they're shifting into Christmas carols included with their Christmas songs. Now, these are really poorly written songs. If you ever go there, I don't say anything to the manager because it's not her fault. It's just like, these are poorly written songs. Except when they sing Breathe, and then some young person sings Breathe, and you can tell she has no idea the meaning of this song. And she's a studio person. I can just picture that she works in Nashville, and she's paid by the hour, and they're just going, here, do some tunes. We got to send them to McDonald's so they can put them on in the morning. So they're singing Christian Christmas music also mixed in there. So here is a passage, this opening up of 52. This is written 700 years before the Messiah is born. Isaiah is the premier big gun prophet. His stuff is more precise than anybody else. I mean, he sees really well when he wrote things about different parts of history. And when I hear him telling the watchman to break forth joyfully, I think of, I don't know why, but the business community and the back Black Friday stuff and little tidbits of things. Like if Friday you happen to have Amazon stock, your Amazon stock is worth a lot more. If you happen to be the top dog at Amazon and you own your 51%, Amazon went up 28% during the day Friday because everybody got on Amazon, and forget about Cyber Monday, they bought online. They had people on the Miracle Mile in Chicago watching the stores just to see how many people show up, and they said, you know, there's not a lot of people out here this afternoon. I mean, during the day on Black Friday. That's because everybody was using their phone and their pads to order things. It was the biggest online sales day that has ever occurred so far. He is now worth, I can't remember, is Jeff? Okay. He is now worth, he ended the day, Friday, being worth $100 billion. His value went up 28% of what money he had. why am I using this as an illustration? Happy Christmas season. You know, it really is. I mean, Jesus got to be born sometime. Merry Christmas. Babies are cute. Jordan's baby is cute in the picture. Some of them went to see the baby. It's so cute. It's so small. We all love babies. Babies smell good. You know, they just, the way their bodies, you know, use energy and stuff, like, they actually smell good. Unless they just thrown up. I mean, they, you know, they just have an odor. Okay, we'll move past that. I can tell that they are going, what? Where is he going? You know, there are exciting things being said in 52. And then go down to verse 13. Behold, my servant will prosper. He will be high and lifted up and greatly exalted. Just as many were astonished at you, my people. So his appearance, and all of a sudden it turns. So his appearance will be marred more than any man, and his form more than the sons of men. And thus he will sprinkle many nations. Now that's like a word for blood. Kings will shut their mouths on account of him. For what had not been told them, they will see. And what they had not heard, they will understand. Because the way news is nowadays, and because of a few can produce something that a lot of people won't, we have billionaires that are moving on up. We have billionaires that are worth $500 billion. They're not calling it that yet, but we will in some of your lifetimes, that we will have trillionaires, not countries, people that are worth $1,000 billion. I mean, we're moving that direction. We are moving back in a time of kings. Now, they're business kings, but they're kings. You know, a handful on the earth down through history, a handful owned everything. And the rest of us worked for them. We were their servants. We were their artisans. We were their, we built their temples. We built their pyramids. We, the masses, served a handful of people on the earth. We are moving there again. The thing that we've called the middle class is shrinking, shrinking, shrinking. It will shrink back to what it used to be, I'll tell you from history. It was the artisans and the educators mainly, a handful of other skilled people. Yeah. Very small number. Yeah. Yeah, until the industrial age, sort of. I mean, this is a blip in the history of humanity. That we are leaving again. There's going to be a few that rule and own everything. And everyone else will work for them and hope to have something to eat and go some. I mean, it just is the way it's going. That's how it is. Those few, I think, again, are going to be confronted with the Messiah. And be in awe of him. But it won't be because of the other day when we were in Washington, some of the paintings that we enjoyed the most were like one of the Rembrandts of Jesus. Some, you know, the high Renaissance paintings. You go in those rooms, you can feel God's presence in them, and these great pieces of work. It's not about art. In fact, there is one that was just done, if you noticed. It's okay if I do another piece of local history. You know, they just sold a picture of Jesus that was probably from Leonardo's studio. It's not even in very good shape. Someone, a person, or some small conglomerate, we don't know who it was. Four people were on the phone, and one person was representing their buyer at Christie's, and it sold for $420 million. It's the first time in a long time that Rembrandt Leonardo only did 20 pieces of work, roughly, and usually they're in galleries somewhere. So this one showed back up on the market not too long ago, and so it sold for that amount of money because somebody could buy it and take it home with them. They probably, I don't know what else they threw in, something. Probably an Amazon gift card with buying it. Chapter 53 doesn't really need any chapter breakdowns. What they had heard, they had not understood. They will. For what has not been told them, they will see, back in 15. And what they have not heard, they will understand. Who has believed our message? To whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of parched ground. He has no stately form or majesty that we should look upon him. He didn't look like King Saul. Didn't look like David. He didn't look like anybody important. No appearance that we should be attracted to him. He was despised and forsaken of men. A man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, like one from whom men hide their face. He was despised and we did not esteem him. So treated that people were embarrassed by him. Surely our griefs, our sickness he himself bore, and our pains or our sorrows he carried, yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God and afflicted, being good Jewish people. Anybody that was treated this way, the Jewish people would say, God is undoubtedly, he is under the judgment hand of God Almighty. When it was exactly not that, something else going on, but that's what it looked like. He was pierced through for our transgressions. It was for our transgressions. Israel and spiritual Israel, the Gentile believers. He was crushed for our iniquities. The chastening for our well-being fell upon him, and by his scourging we are healed. All of us, like sheep, have gone astray. Can you hear that? Can you hear that echo almost? All of us, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us have turned to his own way. But the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on him. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he didn't open his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to slaughter, like a sheep that is silent before its shears, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And as for his generation who considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living for the transgressions of my people, to whom the stroke was due, his grave was assigned with the wicked. He would have been buried with the two thieves. Yet he was with a rich man in his death, because he had done no violence, nor was there any deceit in his mouth. God sent Joseph and a tomb, a rich man's tomb, to put him in. But the Lord God, our Father, was pleased to crush him, putting him to grief, if he would render himself as a guilt offering. Nevertheless, if there's any way this cup can pass from me, but nevertheless, not my will be done, but your you know, that what he's accepting this in the garden. He will see his offspring, and he will prolong his days, and the good pleasure of the Lord will prosper in his hand. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross. And as a result of the anguish of his soul, he will see it and be satisfied. And by his knowledge of the righteous one, my servant, will justify the many as he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will allot him a portion with the great. He will divide the booty with the strong because he poured out himself to death and was numbered with the transgressors, yet he himself bore the sin of many and interceded for the transgressors. This is stronger than when people talk about Roman crucifixion. Other people were crucified. This is a stronger statement because Isaiah prophetically is you're touching more of what Jesus has bared. In Luke 11, 47, Jesus has been talking to Pharisees, and then the scribes, the teachers of the law, start complaining. Well, you're not treating us that way. He says, you are the ones who have built tombs for the prophets, and it was your fathers who murdered the prophets. How atrocious. You have honored, now these years later, the prophets, and yet we go back and it was your spiritual lineage, the ones who kill the prophets. Skip over to Isaiah 55. Verse 6. I'm just picking up pieces of things. I mean, all this is so strong through here, these chapters. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he's near. Let the wicked forsake their way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord and he will have compassion on him and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, and nor are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than yours, your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain and the snow come down from heaven and do not return there without watering the earth and making it bear and sprout and furnishing seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so will my word, by which goes forth from my mouth, it will not return to me empty without accomplishing what I desire and without succeeding in the matter for which I sent it. I hear in those verses in 55, there's hope for anybody. Anyone. No matter what their life looks like. No matter what. It's beyond you and me to know about them. Because if Father God's involved, it's not how you and I would see it anyway. I know I have. I'll probably do it some more. See somebody and think, nah, they'll never make it. Nah, not the right material. Not got the right attitude. Not at whatever. He can give them a dream in the night and turn them around. He can knock them off of their horse and say, you work for me now, Saul. He can change anybody. After all, he's God the Father. He knows them before they were created, before anything was made. I have no idea why I've gone here with any of this today. Except that it felt like I was asking him, why this? And I thought he said, I would like for you to attempt to honor Jesus. Before the culture gets caught up in the baby coming, and why it's not anywhere near Easter, and you're expected to speak on this, how about honoring Jesus? How about just honoring him? I could have sent him in special clothes. I could have sent him with tons of angels visual. I could have seen him shining like brighter than the sun, but I chose to bring him this way. I chose to make him invisible to the powers that be, that Herod would never see him. But I'll show him to shepherds, smelly shepherds. I'll take him in the temple when he gets older. I'll let the old prophetess lady come up and get to see him, get to hold him. I'll let Simeon's word I promised to him to come true, that he will not die until he's seen my solution, the Messiah, even though he's coming in baby form. You and I on regular basis are exposed to the divine. Sometimes we catch it, and other times we don't, only because we're just full of our own life right then. It's not terrible. It's just the way it is. We're just, you know, your toe hurts because you dropped a brick on it. It was loud enough to miss the spiritual moment. Humility goes a long, long way. Not beating yourself up, saying you're lesser than you are. You're a child of the King. You can't just go put yourself down. That's not humility. Humility is like Moses, knowing who he was and who God was. And then you're humble enough that you can say, and Moses was the humblest man that ever lived, when you're writing about yourself. That's humility. Help me. Somebody help me. You hear anything? Think anything? Did it trigger anything? Chris, I'm about to give it to you. I think I get caught up in the American way of honoring Jesus and end up not really honoring him. You know, that I went out and sat in my truck yesterday and read this at the right rate. There was nothing I had to, someplace I had to be. It was, I wish I could always read like that. Each word, I was present in it. I felt like I got that I was next to Isaiah writing this. And Isaiah was listening and writing it as he was listening. It broke my heart. Because I identified with Israel. I identified with what Isaiah was saying. I was as guilty as all of them. I've always been that guilty. And yet, he called me as his child. So we can be full of thanksgiving. He called us. We didn't do anything to deserve it. He wanted us. I don't know why, but he wanted us. It's enough to make you dance. It's enough to make you laugh ridiculously and act silly when you get in touch with it. It's bizarre. It's unbelievable. The Creator of all things wanted you. Jesus, Son of God, Son of Man, was willing to use himself as payment for you because he wants to live with you forever.
I think the part that got me yesterday, Todd, was the embarrassment part. The part in, you know, it's like, yes, he came to die. Yes, he was. Yeah, it's the embarrassment part. Can you hear in Isaiah? Isaiah's in touch with the embarrassment part. As Jewish people, under God the Father, and that God the Father's Son would be treated this way. How could the angels even look on this? It's such an embarrassment. In heaven, that the Son would be treated this way by the ones that he's come to save.
That was the sentence. That was the communication. Okay, that's why. Look, there's a...
Read that very first part again, if you don't mind.
I revealed myself to those who did not ask for me.
I love that part. During worship, I saw a picture. It was it's like a slow movie, and it was a really pretty window scene, and there was a windowsill, and the light was coming in, kind of an amber tone. Sitting on the windowsill were what I assumed were velvet-covered apples, but then Lord revealed to me that they were deflated hearts. They were withered. And they were sitting on a windowsill. And so what the Lord wanted to remind us this morning of, and if this is you, we can pray for you, is that on your heart, he has written promises. There are scriptures. There are prophetic words. There are dreams. There are the words that he placed, that he spoke. From his hand, he wrote them on your heart. He did not forget those words. He will not back down from what he has said about you and what he wrote in your heart. If you have forgotten that, the Son is on that today. He will stand your heart back up. The word always applies. When he stood up at the beginning of creation and he said, creation be, that same power, like thousands of generations later, is still as powerful today as it was then. This is just a heart. It was galaxies he stood up. He can totally stand your heart back up in hope. So if you are here this morning and you're hopeless, or you feel like your heart is forgotten, that was a good word. He has not. So I don't know who else here, they could be part of a prayer team. If the band wants to come up, you're welcome to come up. And thank you, Todd. And we'll pray for you. And we will bless you.
And people are in the bit of despair. And that's not what we're
Good. Thank you. I'll take it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thank you for that, little Nolan. Salt and light. And he's created us to have influence. He's the king of all. He's got all of the riches. He has all of the influence. He has all of the flavor. It's always current. He never goes out of style. He always knows what to say. And when our hope arises, then influence happens around us. Relationships are restored. Homes are glued back together.
Come, Lord.
He has not called us into a place of disparity.
Come, Lord.
All of your words, Jim, you've preached your pants off the last 2 weeks. God's been with you today. Thank you for that. If you need to leave today, feel free to. We just bless you with the full authority of Christ. May he go before you. May he stay behind you. May he be beside you. May he be in your every breath. If you need ministry, great. Come over here. If you need some hugs, find someone and be embraced.